My question is, why do you want need to shine? That's the problem, no? Because then there is a shining economy. You don't need to stand out. You just need to be you.
Sameer, before we set context to the whole thing, I'd love for you to introduce yourself.
So I will sum up my life in one sentence. If flies throw lemons at you, you just need to make lemonade. So I was born in a fairly rich family with silver spoon or platinum spoon in my mouth. But as luck would have it, by the time I was in high school, my dad lost his business. We were declared insolvent. So I had no choice but to start working very early. And and as a young person who's sort of born in riches and sort of see his father fail, you know, fail as in fail, was very hard hitting for me. But I also knew that, normatively, I'm the son, I need to be strong and I need to sort of support the family, and I continue doing my third journey. So my journey of education happened between Srinagar, Amritsar, Faridabad, and college was in Delhi University. Even before I could finish my college, I had certain challenges in life which I need to deal with. I came back and finished my graduation later. So my life has been sort of a roller coaster ride in that context. And I remembered, mom's friend was looking for somebody to support her in school administration. I just went by chance and said, okay, I can help you. And it rained very heavily one day and there were less teachers in the school. And she said, would you mind going into the class and substituting for a teacher? I don't have many teachers today. And I know you're here to oversee constructions and everything else, but could you do that today? And that was way back in 1996, January. And I stayed back in classroom for the next 14 years. So that was my journey of being a teacher. I realized that there's so much. And I'm not very proud of the teacher I was. But yes, I was a teacher. Of course, very normatively, conventional school, ICSC, academic was the focus. Excellence was the only benchmark we would measure children against. And I worked in that school for about 6 years. And after that, I got an opportunity in a very wonderful school called Springdale Senior School in Amritsar. And that school has a very different vibe to it. The promoter of the school started with a vision that this school has to become inclusive and sort of encourage children to be who they are in the best form possible. They could be an artist, a singer, a painter, or an academic-oriented child. And there I joined, and in 2 years, first year of teaching, I was an excellent maths teacher. I used to be paid the highest rate for maths tuition in the city. So when I worked in that school, in a year later, guess Mansi, my boss calls me and she says, I'm going to send you to a different trajectory and you're not going to be maths teacher anymore. And I was such a good maths teacher that her son wanted to move to my class. So that was my benchmark of excellence, small town, small city, small, big school. She told me to teach theater for 1 year.
Wow.
And she said, you will continue to teach business to grade 11th and 12th, because that's where you, I see not somebody else playing that role, because, you're young, you're that age and you're able to inspire them. But I would want you to take maths load completely. And I was a lot of resentment. And I said, what did I do? Am I a bad teacher? Do you want me to leave? And she gave me a book to read. It's called Who Moved My Cheese? I read that book and she says, if your answer stays the same after reading the book, read it 2 times, I would put you back into the maths department. I was the homeroom in charge and we used to have a lot of competitions, which I used to enjoy. But I think after reading that book, I realized that universe had a calling for me and I'm sort of need to answer that call. And my education continued parallelly. At that time, I was finishing my master's in commerce through distance education. Then I did my BEd from Kashmir University, again, correspondence. And I realized she put me into a department where she was setting up a department for creative and performing arts. She says, I wanted somebody there who understands academics, but also values creative and performing arts, which according to her in that team, she couldn't find anybody. And she felt that whatever I was doing, there was a creative element to that, a different. And in 2 years time, I was promoted director of the Vindhapa Center for Creative Arts and Performing, Creative and Performing Arts. And I started a nonprofit organization there for them, which was working basically on building youth capacity in the villages in Punjab. Also building up a bridge between India and Pakistan to create a peace dialogue, because we both were mad people. She's no more. But we were mad people. We used to work all night and sort of go to the school in the morning. And the idea was that my grandfather's generation has good memory of Pakistan. Our dad's generation has bitter memory. And our generation has no memory. Our memories are always formed by the political relationship between the two countries and the media. So we thought, why not bring children together and sort of let them form the opinion about each other? So we did that project for about 9 years. I stayed in that school for good 9 years. And I headed their international affairs, director of Center for Creative and Performing Arts. I was teacher, head of department. And 2010, after she passed away, I thought that I've contributed to the school. I stayed back for 2 years and I said, maybe my role is over. I need to rethink. And I jumped into entrepreneurship with a friend. We started a company which was taking children around the world on experiential education. And I spent about 4 years working with him, traveling internationally, almost 28 countries, from Oblak with Dune School to Johnson Space Center with Wellens to Kennedy Space Center with the Kalman. Name the school and name the country we've been there, doing the program. But 2015, I think, with the way company was shaping up, was very different from what I envisioned it to be. So I decided to part my ways. I made some wrong investments and decisions at that time. Whatever I owned, I lost that money, I lost friendship, and I decided to move on. It was second major failure in my life, you know. And I think I was, for a lack of a better word, a lot of my friends identified that I'm struggling with something inside, but I don't have vocabulary for it. I'm not able to express what I'm going through. And of course, you know, in introspection, you said you were in education, you gave so many years, you came back, you did entrepreneurship, you traveled, but you lost all that you built in. You know, I mean, so much so, some people said that I was sort of, they seemed to see suicidal tendencies in me. My wife was told, indicated that. But I think somewhere deep, I knew I was struggling with something. I didn't know what it was. And at that point of time, National Geographic Channel reached out to me and say, hey, we're looking for somebody who understands school ecosystem, but also understand P&L balance sheet form. And we have this project, you know, education is a holy cow. Everybody wants to milk it. So I said, would you like to join us? So I joined there as a consultant for 1 year. I did that project, great work experience. My boss was Swati, was phenomenal. Learned so much there, but I also said at the end of it, probably this is not my calling. And at that point of time, I picked up small consultancies project across the country with schools, some training, some travel. And I also traveled myself a lot. I went as a summer teacher to Seven Oaks School in UK, to rugby school in UK, interned as a... So I was building up my perspective, and wherever I went, people kept telling me, you know, you should be in school. You're such a great teacher. Children listen to you. You know, we make an effort for them to listen to us, but they listen to you. Why aren't you not in education? And 2017, I met this phenomenal guy, Saad Seth, who was running a school in Bangalore. He had some leadership challenges. He said, would you like to join me? And I said, okay, let's join. By that time, I decided if nothing works out, I'm going to go to my sister lives in UK. My brother-in-law's in UK. So I'll go to UK, probably start a 7-Eleven store and put up a coffee shop and some books.
We all have these backup plans, no? We all have made these backup plans. I wanted to have that friends, like, I thought I'll open like the cafe that they used to hang out at Central Park. So I thought I'd probably do that and everybody will come there and, you know, we'll yes. Hang out as a bonus. Interesting.
Joined Legacy. Legacy was a turning point in my life. I learned so much in international pedagogy. I learned a lot about human relationships. I also learned a lot about how to build a community, how to view a community, and how schools' reels are changing. You know, schools 10 years, 15 years back, as a head of school, I can say I know it all. Today, I can't say I know it all. I think some areas my children know way more than I know, right? My teachers know way more than I know. I can never know, probably. So schools from institutions of learning become learning communities for me. Yeah. And at that point of time, I think in that career, I still remember there was this student who was a very sharp kid. In grade 11, he flew to Malaysia to give his startup pitch to a venture capitalist, very bold. But he was always sort of had just about passing or failing grades. So, you know, I always realized that. And when he wanted recommendation letter for his, he applied to Harvard Business School and he wanted to go to a couple of top business schools and he applied and no teacher wanted to write recommendation. They said, what do we write about him? We don't know anything good about him. So that sort of also was an interesting journey for me. And I said, as teachers, how we reflect what society sees as an excellence, you know, this child has so much to offer to the world. He has a solution to the world's problem. He may not be getting probably a B or C in business, which I'm teaching him. But I think he's smarter than any top kid in the class because he set up a business plan and is proposing it, flying half the way to Southeast Asia and proposing it to venture capitalists. That takes a lot of courage, right? Yeah. And I also joined IC3 movement, started rediscovering how a counselor can play a critical role. So I think conversations, perspectives, being a part of children's lives, you know, whether that's there. So, you know, some kids were struggling with gender identity, who they were and how they were born as and how the family and society views them. Some children were struggling with loss of a parent. Some children were struggling with loss of relationship between parents. So being a part of the journey, I also realized that how as a society and as an individual, I'm also conditioned to think in a box. What is an ideal idea of how a child should be, you know? And this continues to be the case wherever we go. So that's a nutshell, my journey. And I'm still discovering who I am. I'm still, figuring out, how can I contribute meaningfully to the lives of young adults who are under my care or otherwise. But that's been my journey born of a father who failed in business at 43, paid the price of dad's failure, struggled for next 15 years, built up myself, started my own entrepreneur, exactly failed at the same age when my dad failed. And I figured out what it meant to him at that point of time. I'd gone back into education and sort of figuring out the nuts and bolts of how the real world functions to what vis-a-vis how the school functions, to also understanding that schools no more have a role to play to teach. These are communities when where children and people come together and you help people become the best version of who they are and not how we see them to be. I don't know if that made sense with that sort of journey I have.
That made so much more sense. I've never had many people on the podcast talk about failures. They've never been, you know, there's so many things that I actually take away, right? So one, of course, is about admitting that, listen, these were the two failures that really impacted my life. I think we only talk about successes, which makes it so boring. And it kind of, you know, even that period when, you know, you were contemplating the 7-Eleven store and you had lost confidence in yourself, you know, and there's so many times in our life we feel iske aage kuch nahi ho sakta, right? Like nothing beyond this.
Yes.
And that's the time we take decisions sometimes that we probably don't need to take. And that's exactly what we're going to be chatting about. We feel like it's a dead end, but it's probably just a bend which we cannot see the next curve of the road. And literally, that's what it is. But we've just got to hang in there, wait till we reach the bend and then continue to walking versus just quitting it right there, right? And I, you know, when I read about this incident, and I read it on your LinkedIn, and I love following you on LinkedIn, and everybody who's watching, listening, this has to follow Sameer on LinkedIn, because I think the pieces that he shares, the insights that he shares, are absolutely priceless. And you shared about, about the girl who committed suicide, a student who actually committed suicide while she was prepping for her NEET exam in Kota. And it actually made me stop. And you know, it's as parents, we always feel ye hamare sa, as humans actually, ye hamare saath
nahi. Hamare saath nahi ho sakta.
Until it actually happens to us, we don't even want to look at that news, right? But I don't know whether it is you being in the fraternity, me being in the fraternity, that it just hits us every day, and we realize that we need to talk about this. Right, we need to bring about awareness about this, and that's exactly what our conversation is going to be about. And the other part, which you also mentioned, was that somebody said, you know, while you were teaching in schools in UK, that you have a way with kids, right? They listen to you. I hope the parents also listen to you after this episode. But I also remember our first meeting where you said about this camp that you were taking with the teens, and I was like, wow, he actually went camping with. Like, how many teenagers did you take with you?
That batch had Bishop Cotton Boys School, Bangalore, 149 boys.
149 boys, dude. We have to give it, like, I think you need a standing ovation for 149 boys on a camp. I cannot even imagine what conspired on that one.
Yeah.
But Sameer, from someone who has seen so much through life, taken on a lot of burden very early on, kind of not navigated the formal way of education through being where you are. How would you break this down into those two or three qualities that helped you thrive through your down period, and also like made you who you are today with this experience that you've kept adding on to yourself?
So I think one of the first quality was that, I mean, that's a great question to ask, but I'm just got to think about what it is. I think one of the qualities which I think, one of the factor which contributed to who I am today is my mother. It sounds very cliched, and I think I'm not mama's boy typically, but I think she never valued my academics over who I was becoming as a person. She never bothered about asking me why your marks were less. I remembered once there was an incident in the family wherein my sister's friend became a victim of eve teasing by my cousin, and she sat me down and she said, "This is sexual harassment, dude. I mean, I'd never want to hear that my son ever did that." So our conversations were not about what were your marks in science, what were your marks in this thing. And she made her life as an open book for both of us. I mean, at least me and my sister. My younger brother was much younger. She would talk about her struggles. She would talk about her own journey. And I think that always made me understand that while academic will play a role in my journey ahead, but what is more important is the person I become through that journey, you know. And I think if you look at role modeling, I mean, I would say she's a role model of strength for me. She's gone through so much, so much, so much. But she's never given up. She's on herself and on any one of us around. So I think so that's one aspect. You know, having somebody around and say, hey, it's okay. It's okay to fail. But what did you learn? Come back and have a conversation about it, you know. She would always have that conversation. You didn't do this, it's fine. But what did you learn out of this process? What are your learnings? What is going to be the way forward? I think that's that aspect of, you know, somebody safe person, having a safe space, which does not judge you for failing or passing or excelling or non-excelling, is important. So it ideally should be one of the parent, but sometimes we find in the teachers too, you know. So that's one aspect. I think I won't call myself religious anymore. I have followed different sects, different paths. But I think wherever I went, I understood the crux of life is do good, be good, have good. So I think we do good, we be good, but we are always expecting something sort of in return. Yeah. So in my journey, I feel that I have to do my best. And my best is this. It may not be best for Mansi, it may not be best for my wife, it may not best be for everything, but this is my best, and I've given it 100%. And post that, you know, it's not in my hands. Whatever comes to me, I'll accept wholeheartedly. So my faith, my readings, I think my books have been great guides, you know, whether that's Alchemist or, you know, Jonathan Livingston, you know, Livingstone Siegel is one of the most popular book I resort to whenever I... You know, I want to think about how do I challenge myself. So I think my reading of spiritual texts, non-spiritual texts, and also understanding with a sense that my best may not be everybody's best, and that's okay. That also come from the faith my mother or trust my mother vested in me, saying it's okay. Be a better person than you were yesterday, and that's fine. And I think I do a lot of positive self-talk. So I don't know how funny that sounds, but I do a lot of positive self-talk. And I tell myself, I have conversation with myself and saying, it's okay, Sunny, you did this. I know this is not the best scenario, but what could be the possible outcomes? How would you do it differently? So I think a lot of positive self-talk.
Or you could call it as reflection, right? You're reflecting with yourself.
Metacognition, reflection, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I love that you say that, you know, your mother paid very little emphasis, and she paid more emphasis on what you learned. Sameer, where are we as parents and educators going wrong in this tug of war of how much to push, that you're not pushing them over, that they fall? So what's how much is a nudge, how much is a push, and what's like a really hard push that will topple them over? Because somewhere we're not getting that balance right? That's why we're seeing them fall like a pack of cards.
So I think, again, Mansi, this is no definitive formula. What worked in my context may not work in another context. But I think, first of all, you have to ask yourself a question. Are you honest to yourself? Do you know who you are as a parent? Are you sure of who you are? And sometimes you may not be okay with who you are, and that's all right. And it doesn't mean going out and open and talk to your parents, who, children, who you are. They're too vulnerable and too young to be able to carry your burden, you know. But I think be comfortable in your own skin and understand who you are, where you failed, where you succeeded, where you did well as a parent, where you did not, and go back and have conversation with children. But the best part is to, again, going back to the same point, saying what my mother did. She never laid emphasis on goals and objectives. She didn't say she wants to see me in medicine, she wants to see me in NDA, she wants to do. She says, be better than what you are today. You know, be better tomorrow what you are today. That was a simple mantra. And she, second thing, she always had conversations about values, being what it means to be hardworking, what it means to be resilient, what it means to be, you know, forgiving. She talked about more human values than she talked about academics. It may not be an ideal case scenario, and another parent would say I would have achieved probably higher potential if my mother was slightly pushy. But I think I turned out fine. So I think as a parent, to give your child a safe space and do not pass on your burden of your expectations onto that child and say, hey, it's okay if you fail. Come and tell. We will support you. I think somewhere, you know, we've taken away that from children. I see sometimes when children, parents come to me, I'm recently had a call from LinkedIn, somebody connected, this mother connected to me. She heard one of my conversations and she said, I'm desperate. I want to talk to you. I want to meet you. I said, let's talk on the phone. I mean, her daughter is in grade 12. She's struggling with, she's in a local school in Gurgaon. And I said, I'm happy to meet your daughter online, in person with you. And I said, what are her interests? I spoke to the daughter. She likes quilling. She likes stitching. She likes gardening. She likes her hands to be sort of active in whatever she does creatively. But she's studying physics, chemistry, economics, and maths. And I told mother, and I said, and she was really worried because I think the child has, she didn't confess, but the child did mention that she's tried to harm herself on a couple of occasions. There's a time when she's really dark and she doesn't understand. And she says, and I know why my mother tells me she's doing it for my best, but I don't know if this is who I am. So I think, and I told the mother, and I said, is it okay to repeat a year? But mother was absolutely close to the idea. She said, ek saal aur physics, maths, economics kar le. Ek saal aur kar le. Phir tu jo bolegi, you know, you can do it in undergraduate. But jaise hi wo undergraduate mein pahunchegi, 3 saal aur economics kar le. Uske baad beta naukri mil jayegi. Fashion se naukri nahi milegi. Wo karegi, beta MBA to reh gayi hai, 2 saal aur MBA kar le. So I think pushing children against the wall and not allowing them to, you know, to be who they are. We don't allow children to be who they are. We've created these boxes, you know, and we want children in those boxes. I mean, I was having a conversation with my colleague today morning. We just catch up every day. These days is a little downtime. And I'm doing a course from Principals Training Center. And one of the questions, you know, I asked was, define learning. And in that conversation, we started that, you know, as a mission statement, we say we enable children asking us questions, you know, and making an impacting a change. But how uncomfortable we are when children ask us questions, right? Right? About our lives. Are we comfortable answering all questions to our children? You know, even as teachers, sometimes we feel intimidated saying, how can you walk up to me and sort of ask me this question? And I always say, it's not how come you ask this question. I say, how do you ask this question? Because there is always a boundary between a teacher and a student, parent and a child. And I always say, yeah, don't be a friend parent. There are enough friends in life for this. The child needs a parent. The child needs a teacher. So don't tag yourself as a friend parent or a friend teacher. So I think allowing children to question the systems, question the processes, question, and allowing them to be who they are. We really, really struggle with that. We really want that one engineer, one doctor. And you know, I this is an Amritsar. I had a student who topped nationally. She topped nationally in grade 10th with almost 100% score. But you know, and she went to Kota. She did her Kota preparation from there. she qualified the JE exam, but her board result was 43. That girl went into depression for 2 years. You know, her parents could not just accept it. And I kept telling them, and it's okay. She still cracked one of the toughest examinations. What if she's not qualified for that? She can do that as well. But again, next year she has to write that process. She has to write board exam also. It's the whole process. It's not that it's like a US college offer which you can defer by a year. An admission in IT can be deferred by. If you don't meet the criteria, you don't meet the criteria. And I think 3 years of counseling, the child lost 2 years of her life, which I still felt was okay. She went to do psychology honors later. And she's a practitioner. She's a practitioner. She's a practicing counselor now.
Wow.
And I cannot imagine how good she would be as a counselor, you know, because she went through that whole journey herself.
Yeah. You know, this reminds me of this brilliant movie. I don't, you know, a lot of people kind of dismiss that movie, but I personally really loved it. I don't know if you've seen Imtiaz Ali's Tamasha. Did you see that movie?
Oh, God. One of my most favorite movies. And I,
you know, for me, it was never about, you know, it was never about a love story. It was really about parenting. Because we just put our kids into that box and then they become these robots and they'll deliver. And one fine day they'll snap out of it. And, you know, they'll stop, you know, they kind of stop remembering who they are. Right. And for me, that movie was that. And what you just spoke of, it almost felt like that for that girl who loved quilling. Right. Samir, it brings me to my next question. Why are we seeing these numbers? And if I may quote some stats, we've seen student suicides have risen by 27% over 5 years. That's the NCRB data. 2021, we saw 1,600 students committing suicide just for failing in their exams. Maharashtra, of course, has the highest suicide rates for students. And it reached an all-time high in 2022 with a 4.5% increase since 2021. And Kota seems to be like a breeding ground for it all. What's going wrong? And why are we seeing these numbers now? Has it always been the case? How are you as someone who's part of the fraternity talking about it?
So I think one of the major challenge we've seen is that we still, again, you know, Mansi, you and I represent probably 0.5% of India right now, right?
Yeah.
So for us to talk about alternative careers, liberal arts colleges, very easy and comfortable.
Absolutely.
Right? Another 30, 35 semi-urban, you know, rural kids are not even familiar with these terminologies. For them, the only way to better life is to become an engineer or a doctor or a civil servant, right? So I think what has happened in last, there are systemic failures. You know, we've never been able to establish, career path for students beyond, we cannot talk about the success stories beyond these 3-4 career streams.
Yeah.
Because it's a passport to success, no matter what, you know. So I think for governments to initiate, I think the whole entrepreneurship movement and saying you can be your own entrepreneur. I was talking to somebody that day and they said before Industrial Revolution, actually, buddy was actually an entrepreneur in themselves. You know, there were very few structures where the businesses and organized industry was there. Everybody was doing something and contributing to the economy in their own way, right? But I think we stopped celebrating that. We started giving more weightage over a period of time to the ranks, to the careers, and we created the hierarchy of careers. Who says within our context, like right now, in my career of almost like, 30 odd years, 28 years, I have come across only 2 children who said that they want to become teachers.
Wow, that's so true.
Right? Never come across somebody who says, you know, I want to do something different. You know, I think this is 7-8 years last, and this is urban kids I'm talking about. Forget about the rural kids and semi-urban kids. So I think a systemic change where we start glamorizing certain careers, and everybody has a role to play. It's a Hollywood which has a role to play. It's a Bollywood which has a role to play. It's the conversation which has a role to play. It's the kind of fiction we write as a role to play, you know. So I think all of this comes together and makes sense. You know, it's a vicious cycle. It's us reflecting, us living the reality what media is reflecting, or media reflecting the realities we are living. So I don't know which one has to be addressed first. And I think the moment there are stories, there are conversations around alternative career paths, around focus and purpose of life beyond money. And it's easy for me and you to say that because we live comfortable life, but somebody, that child in the village, you know, look at what Shaheen has been able to do through Teach for India. The whole education system is sort of, she's challenged and brought changes, and there are millions of kids. And I think the second challenge is that systemically, we don't hold on to human capital in our country very well. And there is a huge brain drain. And I see so many of them who've sort of gone out because they feel our country doesn't provide an offer, you know, despite being whatever third most growing economy and kind of one of the top. So unless a parent in a rural area understands, or a child in a semi-urban setting understands, then there are career opportunities for me and there are paths for me to take beyond being a doctor or an engineer, and which can lead me to a successful journey, which could be becoming a teacher in an IB school that are probably well paid, more than probably today an engineer in a B-grade firm, right? This is not going to change. So this is a clear systemic change which we require, and a conversation at the grassroots level needs to happen. You know, we set up the ITIs, look at the ITIs. It's not that we don't talk about vocational education, what NEP is talking about, but what have we done with our ITIs? Who wants to go to ITI? I'll tell you another interesting program. You know, as we serve a rich elite kids of Gurgaon, and of course, we at HCL as a tech company has a program called HCL Tech B. You know, the Tech B program encourages students to take a formal career path after grade 12. That means these students can join a workforce. In 8 months, they will be productive, contributing to the economy. In 4 years, while they're working, they will also be finishing their undergraduate degree from a top universities like BITS. And then they can have a career path, what any engineer would normatively have. But nobody wants to do that, because graduation is the holy grail of everything you do. You have to go to a college to do BTech, no matter how bad that college is. You can't take a vocational route. So how do we... I think it's also because ITIs did not serve their purpose very well. Hence, people went away from that. And blue-collared is considered, again, social stigma about, you know, blue-collared versus white-collared jobs. So I don't know if there is a solution, but I think systemically we have to start impacting this change, not in the top section of the society, but I think the bottom section of the society. It has to go bottom-up. It's going top-downwards. And it'll take us decades to address that then, or probably a century to address that.
So it's so well said about what you just spoke of, right? Because we really don't have a career path of where these where these kids can actually go. And I think our inability to even talk about what are the opportunities that are presented to them, right? Question back at you is, how can parents and educators provide that buffer to the child when it gets tough in terms of, okay, this is, you know, if you do this, I mean, I don't know, again, I don't think it's a definitive answer. It depends on every student. But how can parents and educators really buffer that pressure when it's really, really tough during competitive exams?
Again, the safe space. It's okay destigmatizing the failure, because right now it's highly stigmatized. Failure, you cannot fail. You cannot fail. That's it. Yeah. You know? So I think destigmatizing failure, saying there's something to learn in the process, then it's okay if you're not able to make it 1 year, we can try for another year. And you should be okay with that, right? So I think, again, going back to the same thing, what are our conversations about with our children? Is it about who they are and what they aspire to become? Or is it, you know, about the numbers, the percentages and the percentiles and the career trajectory? You know, I again, in my friend circle, you know, I recently went out for a lunch party and I saw my friend's daughter, and I could see on her face, and I asked my friend, I said, do you mind if I talk to her for 10 minutes? He said, kya hua? Kuch to nahi hua usko. I said, do you mind if I speak to her? Because, I mean, I'm concerned. Girl is not opening up to me. I said, how many hours do you, day you sleep? She said, 4 hours, 3.5 hours. I said, what do you do? She said, I have pressure. And she's a great creative kid, national level debater, orator, but doing PCM, because father is very clear that it has to be PCM tour journey. But father doesn't see any problem in that. He said, ye sab humne bhi to kiya hai, inko bhi karna hai. Kya problem hai isme? Aajkal ke bachche zyada stress lete hain. But I keep telling my colleagues, teachers also, and tell parents also, our vulnerabilities were very limited. We were not born in a WhatsApp era, where one news event impacts so much to us that I can take a decision in a fraction of a second. And also parents going back and telling feeding in their children. Sometimes, you know, we come across parents who would say, if you don't do this as a school, my child will take his life. If you don't do this, I'm worried about. So what kind of community and what kind of a nation are we trying to build? So I think even if your child has taken a journey under your pressure to try, and for a lack of a better word, you're funding their education, you're telling them very clearly, you got to do this, at least try this. Don't push them beyond that and continue to give them a safe space that, okay, I want you to do it. Maybe you may not understand the reason, but should you fail, should you feel differently, come back and have conversation, you know? So like, I couldn't have that conversation with that girl. I just asked her one question, how many hours a day you sleep? She said 4.5 hours. I said, what happened? What are you doing these days? I've not seen you, your Instagram updates on MUN and stuff like that. She says, oh, that was in grade 10th. I'm in 11th now. So you know how the whole circle is. What we liked, we took away that. We want her to pursue what we want her to pursue. We want her to pursue at the benchmarks we want her to excel in, you know. Yeah. So I think creating a safe space, saying even if you're living my dream or my aspirations, I still will listen to you. So come back. Should you fail, should you feel differently, come back. Create opportunities of conversations.
Right.
And also... Also, just seek a professional help if you feel you're not able to do that. Not all of us are good at conversations with our children, right?
Yeah. But also, do you also feel that there is, what is adding to this added pressure? Like you said, that there is, they're growing up in a WhatsApp era. But what do you think is, what are the factors? Like, I always feel like there is so much more that kids need to do today to sort of shine versus what we actually did. We had so much time. And I feel like they barely have time. So what's adding to the pressure?
Can I be very honest? I'll be beaten blue and black in the community. We've created a parallel passion economy. You have to, a child at the age 16 has to be passionate about badminton or tennis. He has to be a certain level player. And there is a whole counselor community who says, if you don't do this, colleges will not give you admission. You don't write a research paper at age 14. You will have a trouble. You don't do this. Why? Why? But there is a whole $1 million economy which is parallelly creating by this, instilling this fear, saying profile building. So profile building ke naam pe humne bachchon ka satyanas kar diya. No peace of mind, no creativity, no downtime, you know. I mean, the moment a month prior to vacation starting, I had at least 20 of my friends reaching out to me. Is there a summer camp I can send my kid to? Is there a coding camp I can send my kid to? Is there a gifted program I can send my kid to? Papa, your kid is sitting in a 60 to 65% bracket. Ask him what he wants to learn and enjoy during vacations. Give him some time to do unstructured learning also. Yeah. Everything is so structured in child's life that there is no downtime. There's no thinking. You know, so I think let children be children. Let them not adult so soon. Already there is enough media influence for them to reach adulthood earlier than we were biologically and physiologically and psychologically. But at least don't take away their childhood memories. Don't take away, you know, an opportunity for them to sit at home and do nothing. It's all right if they're doing nothing.
Right. But do you feel, and again, from your experience, do you feel parents who are very alpha, who kind of push and bring about a structure to their child's life versus somebody who's more relaxed or laid back? Have you seen difference in short-term and long-term results of those children?
So are we talking about two spectrums, you know, extreme spectrums? There has to be a balance, you know, because child is also growing in a vulnerable community. You have to set certain non-negotiables for the child. What are those non-negotiables? You have to discuss in your context. For example, I can't see if the child, there is no learning difficulty diagnosed and the child is not attempting to study at home at all. There is a constant complaint from school ki homework nahi pura ho raha hai. You say, nahi yaar, kya hai, bachcha hai, karne do. You also have to prepare the child for the real world, saying, in a child's life, let's sit down and figure out what are the negotiables for you, what are the non-negotiables for you, what is your journey, what is your achievement level, and what do you have to gain through these experiences. But let me tell you, I mean, I'll give you very, it's a sample size is small, but I'm meeting a friend's son who's in Oroville. She's gone to Oroville and she lives in Oroville. She's an Orovillian now. You bring her kid to a table, he can beat any top level school kid in conversation. The way he explains the meaning and purpose of life, I don't think I can articulate it that well. And how he's learned it through community learning. There is no structured schooling there. Bangalore has great schools like Purna Learning Center and Creative, and so a couple of great schools. They're learning communities. I've seen the best kids coming from there in Legacy when I was teaching at Legacy. And they had no formal schooling till probably age 15, 16. They only started formal schooling when they reached particularly 9th and 10th. They were only learning, and children across age group sitting. So I think the science has proven, neuroscience has explained it. There are examples, but it's easy to industrialize our education model. So hence we fall victim to that. So I've seen kids whose parents are not aspirational at all, if that's your question. But they have been given the right stimuli in the environment by enrolling them into the learning communities and not probably formal schools, and allowed the freedom to make their own choices. I've seen them succeeding very, very well. Vis-a-vis a parent who's an alpha and saying, I want my child to achieve this at this age, at this age, at this age, doesn't work out. I also know a kid, great kid, participated in, for anonymity, I won't be able to name the child, but went to one of the toughest competition in the world. It's called World Championship something. India's youngest silver medalist in India's history was competing with 24-25, but did not get any top college. He went to Georgia Tech, great university, but MIT, Stanford, Harvard, none of that. Why? Because child did not have a why. He did not see anything beyond self. So if you're looking at top colleges, they are also identifying what you're doing is also structured and paid for. You're not fools by the end of it. And the child has a substance inside. So I always say what you do, it doesn't matter. Why you're doing it would matter. That is what would stand out in a college application. And so don't think what you're doing. Even if you're going to a neighbor's auntie and getting her ration 4 times a week, but what is the purpose and motive behind that is what is important. If you're doing it for college application, it's as good as writing a research paper to XYZ company paying $4,000 and coming back. It's as good or as bad as that. But if you're doing, because there is a level of empathy, you understand her children are overseas, and your 10 minutes with her, 20 minutes with her, reminder of her child with her time with the grandparents, and that gives you a sense of fulfillment, that empathy in that relationship gives you some meaning and purpose, then there is a story here, right? So I don't think either is an ideal scenario. I think you have to allow children to experiment. Experimentation is also very sort of now, if you go, just like you go to doctor, right? They say, okay, ye nahi khana, ye nahi khana, ye antibiotics hai, ye kar lijiye. Aap ek counselor ke paas jayega, ye research paper likhna hai, South Africa jana hai, ek emu farm pe aapko serve karna hai, aur uske baad India mein aana hai, kisi slum mein jaake aapko thode se bachcho ko padhana hai, aur ye sab aapko apne resume mein dalna hai, and there is a great recipe for a great application. Sorry, it doesn't work out. Has child through the process become a better human being? No. So I think this is where we're going wrong. We're commercializing and industrializing everything. There's too much of structure to everything. And learning doesn't happen in structures, let me tell you. There is only, if I may say, imitation happens in structures. You may be able to imitate a structure. You may be able to produce a desired result. But that's not learning. Because it's done under a forced stimuli. It's constantly being fed. Or it's been tutored, mentored, scaffolded to way too much.
Right. I love that. I love how you said, for me, I think that's the golden line that you mentioned, which is imitation happens in structured environments. That was so well said. This kind of comes back to where you started from, which was in Amritsar, a small town. And I know this is one of the biggest fears that a lot of parents have today. And I'd love to know it from you, which is that urban city kids don't have the hunger and drive, and they will be outshone by the tier 2 children in absolutely no time. It's happening. The hunger, drive, and the will to change their fate is so, so strong that we'll never be able to inculcate it. Is it here already?
It's already here. I recently met about 3 weeks back a friend's kid, and he's a graduate from a good Delhi University college. He went to UK. So he's come back, and he's for 3 years he's doing nothing. So my friend said, this is friend's friend, and he said, can you talk out to him? So I've sat down with him, you know, the counselor hat in me always sort of in weird places I have to wear that hat, and I went for a dinner, but I ended up meeting a young kid, and he says, why do I need to work? I said, because there's purpose. He says, what do you need? He says, I've done my Excel very well. My dad has X number of 100 crores. Even if I don't work, my next two generations are sorted. Why do I need to work?
Yeah.
And I asked him, where do you get this inspiration from? He said, my dad is sitting on the property. He's sold his 3 Delhi properties and sitting on Aralias, Magnolias, Camellias. What is he doing with his life? Why are you telling me? Why don't you counsel? My dad needs more counseling than I need.
Wow.
So he says, what's the purpose of my dad's life? He says, I'm following him. Why don't you have conversation with him? I don't think I need to have conversation with you, Sameer uncle. My dad needs more counseling. So I think they're also somewhere imitating us, aping us, saying, what are we finding meaning and purpose in our lives with? So I mean, if we haven't found that, I mean, where do you expect? I mean, I've another uncle who's gone to Cambridge, great guy, lived in Middle East, doing phenomenally well for himself, retired at 60, doing 2 masters. And both his kids went to colleges which I haven't even heard of, the names of those colleges, liberal arts colleges in the US. And they're both doing fine. I asked him, I said, you never had the drive to send them? And I said, it's their journey. It's not my journey. I did my journey in my time. How their journey is, I cannot change that. I can provide them stimulus. I can provide them resources. This journey. I said, you never told them to have an aspiration. He said, aspiration doesn't mean top tier college. Aspirations means what do you like, what do you want to be, in how many years you want to be there. So I think that's what sums it up.
Right. And do you feel that is it sometimes the problem of abundance that leads us to such harsh decision making? That itne logon mein main, how will I shine? And therefore I'll never make it. Like everybody is doing so much of it.
My question is, why do you want need to shine? That's the problem, no? Because then there is a shining economy. There is another different kind of stone.
Forgetting the PM's thing, which is India shining, right? We all need to shine.
You don't need to stand out. You just need to be you. Because every individual has something extremely unique as that person's DNA is, so is unique his abilities. And if that abilities match with that, honestly matches with that college or university or things like that, you are already not shining or outdoing others, because you know it's also constantly teaching children violence, competition. You have to compete, and then we are saying the world of tomorrow will be all about collaborations while we teach them competition. How does that work out?
No, I'm completely with you, because we don't understand that while we are talking and seeking collaboration, we're still talking competition to our children. 100% with you on that one. A quick question here, which I think a lot of the parents today feel, is the threshold for our children on failure very low? Why didn't we see so many mental health problems back in our days? And see, the reference to everything is back in our days, hamare zamane mein, right? That's always the reference point. And you know, just the other day I was reading something and it said that a parent's definition of success is my child more successful than me? Then he's fine. Is he a better human being than me? Then he's fine. Our benchmarks only begin and end with us, right? So question here, and perhaps on this one the answer would be surprising, which is, are the benchmarks for our kids very, very low for failure?
Yes and no. I think, there's this very conventional, very normative, acronym of FAIL. It's called First Attempt in Learning. When do we start believing that? That means if I'm failing, why do we see I fail? When I stop trying. That's the time when I give up and I fail. For example, if a child is at a particular threshold and is not able to achieve... Sorry, my dog has decided to contribute to the conversation.
Okay.
Allow me a minute.
Yeah.
So I think that's important to understand. We've set our benchmarks as for our children. Our times were very different. our times were no vulnerabilities at all. One Chitrahar, one movie a year, a week was good enough for us to sit across the one television at home. Everybody is a personal device for entertainment right now. When will we stop comparing, you know? So it's very interesting, you know, Mansi, you said that I do something called a power walk with children, you know, in one of the reflective moments, which sort of we have a program in Shivnada we call Education for Life. Our CEO, Colonel Gopal, talks about it a lot, saying that if you're not building their muscle for the real world, then we're not doing good enough as an educational institution. So in this financial literacy, self-awareness, all of that we do, and there is power walk concept wherein you all bring them at a level, and then you make a statement. And the people who agree with the statement or experience it step forward, and the ones who do not step backward. 5 questions, the whole dynamics of the classroom changes, you know. And you ask them to look around and see how the power dynamic in that small ecosystem, very homogenized population, because who's going to be in my school? A certain bracket income who can afford to pay that. Within that, the vulnerabilities, the diversity of challenges, the diversity of experiences so much that power walk brings out that. So I think we need to stop making ourselves as a reference point, and doesn't mean that we have to raise the bar of failure also very high, right? In our times, I think 80% was the maximum. I've heard in my school anybody getting it. Now everybody gets 100%. Yeah. So
and they're not happy. 95, they're not happy. So which makes me wonder, like 95 se zyada kitna chahiye, but it's apparently not good, so I hear.
Yeah, I told you about my friend's son who's got 95% in ICSE, and she's getting condolence calls from her friends and family saying, isko kya ho gaya, khali 95 aaye hain. Us bachche ne history ka project kiya hai, 2 internships kiye hain, sports khelna seekh raha hai, jo bilkul acha nahi lagta usko. Yaar, wo bhi to tareef kar do.
Yeah, yeah.
And literally, she's saying, Sameer, what do? I'm getting, is there something wrong with me as a mother that I'm not bothered about it? I said, please don't. You know, don't bother about 95 right now. Just bothered about who's he becoming. You pushed him out of his comfort zone to play sports. Ki bhai, sports khelna hai. Tumhe competition nahi karna, lekin sports khelna hai. The idea is clear. I don't want you to play tennis to go and do the district level, state level, national level. That's another ball game. I want you to play sports because this is what sport does to a human being. You know? So those are the kind of conversations we need to have. And our benchmarks are very redundant. They don't apply in this world today. You know, when with every single child having a personal device, entertainment device at home, you say, hamare samay mein to hum ye sab time nahi dekhte the. Hamare samay mein itna entertainment ka masala kahan tha? You know, 3-4 mahine mein ek movie release hoti thi, uske liye black hoti thi, khade hoki, you know, maardaad hoti thi. You press Netflix, you have got 100 movies to watch on Netflix, which are latest releases in last 3 years. Where are we talking about? So I don't think so. We are a benchmark for our children at all.
Right. And also I feel we never played sport or did any extracurricular with an end goal. Somewhere I feel the, and I don't know if you agree with me, but somewhere I feel that we've become so result oriented in our parenting that, hey, you're part of the speech and debate. Like for us to be part of the speech and debate club was a big thing. Whether we won or whether we made it to that international competition or not, there was no aspiration. There was only joy in doing it, right? We played tennis. I mean, I played tennis and I continue to play today, and I picked it up in the last 3 years because I played as a kid. I didn't have district or state, and I don't know whether it was good or bad. But there was joy for the game and there was love for the game, and I watch it as a sport even today. But do you feel that has also shifted in the way we are raising our children?
Thank you for bringing a very pertinent point. We've taken it away from our children for doing things for the joy of doing things. You know, we've just taken it away. Everything has to have a benchmark. Everything has to have a goal. Like I told you, you know, my mother never gave me goal. Doesn't mean I don't know how to set up the goals. But she asked me, are you better than what you were yesterday? Without even referring to anybody. And I think this whole... So, you know, what has happened is, I think after the liberalization, privatization and globalization, there is another series of opportunities which have opened up in the country, whether that's sports or that's fashion or that's anything. And I think now with foreign universities allowed to open centers in India, I think there'll be a different ballgame. What we've forgotten is, as humans, we need to pursue interest because we are interested, not because we need results from everything. You may not have results for everything. You know, and honestly, I tell you, it's just my wife tells me, and any Sunday when I don't open my laptop, I really feel guilty. I feel really, really that I'm cheating on my organization. So that's the level of conditioning which has happened. Then I have to work on Saturdays, Sundays also, right? So I think this result orientation, and also there is a purpose behind this because there is a whole industry which is promoting it. If you study the book Money of Psychology of Money, you'll also see how we built it around it. How we built it around the whole narration is starting not from us. It's not even starting from parents. It's somebody else is playing that game with us, saying, how do you create a deficit mindset, saying, if you don't do this, you won't be able to get this. And hence play on that as a marketeer and achieve your end goals of commercial goals.
No, absolutely. And, that carrot stick approach that we've given to ourselves and feeling guilty, I completely agree. For me, the biggest joy was when I asked my mother, who's now 75, and I asked her, why did you put me in tennis? Just out of curiosity, when I was visiting her, and I said, why did you put me in tennis? Like, I didn't become Steffi Graf or whatever. She said, for me, it wasn't about you becoming Steffi Graf, but the joy that I get that you play tennis even today is far bigger than you becoming Steffi Graf, right? And I kid you not, I felt so shallow at that point in time. And I am very happy to admit it on my own show. I felt, oh my God, they never think results only. They for them, their child was important. The joy I got out of being for that class was important, right? And I think, and she said, you continue to learn every day. And, that is what is important. You continue to even be a student today of the game. And that for me is important. And I was like, this is incredible. And I think the minute parents stop becoming students, I think is where the problem begins. And I keep saying this, that we always send our kids to class. And this happens to me all the time. Like my daughter said, Mom, I didn't play football today very well. I said, you know what? You should have come to my tennis class. The teacher shouted at me as well. I didn't play well as well. Because humko lagta hai, why are they not performing? Why are they not performing? Arre, par tum racket utha ke to dekho how difficult it is to perform, right? Like that sir is, and I kid you not, Sameer, sometimes the teacher is just talking and I'm not mentally present. Something is going on in my head and I cannot seem to do it, right? And that's the time I realize what my child is going through if I'm telling him, why are you not getting this right? Why are you not getting this right? But he's not getting it right. Maybe he's also not 100% present like I was. And I think for me, these are epiphanies that keep happening all the time when I switch between, switch between somebody who's conscious of this, of the parenting ecosystem, and somebody who's a parent at the same time, right? I don't know, did you agree, disagree? Do you see that with parents?
No, I completely agree to that. I mean, the level of investment in terms of, I'm not talking about monetary investment, the level of investment of aspirations we've done in our children, it's extremely burdening for any child to carry that. You know, we need to unburden them. And I think live the life of a student today for 1 week, I bet you most CEOs will be I don't want to use any unparliamentary words. It's almost there, but I think they'll be very uncomfortable.
It's forbidden on the podcast, so please. Yeah. Nothing's forbidden, so please go ahead and use it.
They'll be shitting in their pants. Give them a life of 1 week in a child's life today with all the distractions they live. They won't be able to succeed for 1 week as a school student who's going from here to here and then coming back home and then going and playing tennis and coming back home, doing SAT classes, then coming back home, doing homework. In all of that, there is a WhatsApp, there is an Instagram. Come on, folks, go and live that life for 1 week and then talk to me, It's really surprising that even today, parents don't want to talk to children about uncomfortable things. Mental health, the issues around, other vulnerabilities, the kind of open resources they have, the access resources. I think out of 10 parents I've met, about 7 would say they don't like to talk about the children's physiology with the children. So here you create an opportunity of somebody else abusing your child on that context, right? Our parents did not talk because they didn't have the right vocabulary. They didn't have the right ecosystem. They didn't have the vulnerabilities. But we are in a different times. We are giving children devices which are like ticking atom bombs.
Right.
What they're doing with that is, whether that's sexting or anything else, it can lead to something else in their lives. Who's talking to children about these things?
Right.
You know? So I think we just, and also we've become an economy of abundance. You know, hame sab kuch karna hai life mein. 18 se pehle humne duniya jeet leni hai.
Right. Two quick questions, Amir, and two concluding questions, actually. What are the signs that your kid is a victim of peer pressure? Or some pressure, even if it's not from the peers? What are those red flags for you?
So the first is withdrawal. You'll see, change in child's behavior, engagement within the family, within the friend circle. So always be part of your child's friend circle in a way or the other, you know, their parents or something like that. Know where your child is going, whom your child is meeting. Some parents say, I don't want like to micromanage my child. You know, be who you want to be. It doesn't work out like that. You need to know who their peers are, what are the kind of vulnerabilities there are, who the kind of parents there are, in the community with it, interacting with. And I think the first sign you get is the withdrawal. That's a very common sign. The second sign, if you're able to also observe if you eat with your child, is lack of appetite. The appetite suddenly shrinks. These are the common symptoms I've seen in children. You know, so that also happens. And the moment you see these signs, start probably connecting with school, go back and have conversation with teachers if teachers have observed the similar behaviors, because we sensitize our teachers a lot, saying that any change in child's behavior, you need to indicate it to the counselor so that we can have conversation with parents. So I think withdrawal, too much technology dependence, loss of appetite, these are the things which start impacting and starts giving you a signal there's something wrong.
Right.
Dip in marks, I won't bother as much unless, it could be one transition to another. But I think these are the things you can start noticing. Nervousness,
right.
More nervousness, lack of interest in anything which is happening around you. So you need to have conversations around it. And you can start very gently with the child also saying, I see these days you're sitting on the dining table, but you're not there. Can I help you? Are you struggling with something? You need to have conversation about it. And it's okay if you don't want to have. I just want to let you know I'm here. I mean, sometimes as a parents, we become too pushy. We want to know now, But just to tell child, it's okay. When you're ready, tell us. We are around. Do you want somebody else to talk to you? Or maybe if there is a cousin or a person the child looks up to, just go back and use that route. But I think you, as parents, you get the signals very, 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 very strongly. Like I had recently, it's another parent case wherein the parent said that for a week, she was experiencing child behavior, which is very unusual. And unless she heard it from her child's school, this is a neighbor, she didn't know. So she came to me for advice, what do I do in this case? And I said, why did you have to sit over that behavior for 1 week until school called you and said, come and talk to us because we want to report something about your child. If you experience your child's behavior consistently 7 days differently, don't you think you had an obligation to go to your child and say, hey, is this something bothering you? Can I help you? Do you need something to talk about? So, and for sure, when she went back to the child, and I said, before you go to school, ask your child. Let him have a privilege of confessing if he's done something wrong. Of course, she went to the child and child broke down and he said, I felt that you never noticed what's happening around, but you didn't ask me these questions. This is what I did. I bullied somebody, so I'm being called to school to, I might get suspension and expulsion. I'm sorry, I did it in anger, but I didn't mean to. I'm not that person. But he said, you didn't notice me for a week. And she said, I observed you for a week. I said, if you're observed, you never asked me. I was hoping that somebody asked me that question. So now you see the transition of fear from what school will do to the transition of fear of parents saying, I don't want to ask this question. I'm making my child strong, resilient, independent. There is a fine balance. When you see that consistently behavior over a short period of time, you must reach out to a child and offer a safe space and think, hey, should you want to talk? There is a space, no judgments. Let's talk about it. If you're not ready to talk about it, would you like to talk to somebody else? Do you need any support? And just be around the child more.
Asking, the child is obviously fearing because of the the fear of punishment, right? They don't know what that punishment is, the consequence is what they're fearing, right? So sometimes that being harsh on that consequence can also lead to them getting into a deeper shell. So how do you deal with it then?
So I think, again, this is an experience of 28 years. Parents treat punishment for themselves more often. They feel it's not a punishment for a child. It's a punishment for them because there is a social stigma attached. Mm. In my last positions in this thing, I've had difficult conversations. We said, this is what a child has done. The school policy says very, very clearly that it is enumerated in black and white that if a child does indulge something like, say, bullying, the child will have to leave the community. There is no choice that community, but we can help you with transition. We'll offer you counselor. We'll make sure that, the child is scaffolded through this exit. But, parents come back and nahi, lekin main apne ghar mein kya bolungi. So now here is the focus. Nahi, main apne mother-in-law ko kya bolungi? Main apne father ko kya bolungi? Where is the focus? Is the focus child? And you tell child, Baba, this is how the real world functions. But I understand we all make mistakes.
Children to make mistakes, are we?
Yeah. So say we make mistakes. School has a stand. If school is telling you that you need to leave the community, never mind. We'll figure out the way ahead in life. It's okay. But help the child reflect saying, do you think you did the right thing? Are you ashamed of what you did? Do you think you did something wrong? If a child says yes, figure out. No problems. I am with you. Whatever school stand is, we'll live through it. No problems. But the moment you go back and talks about my child will do something, put pressure on school or somebody else or an agency, doesn't work out like that. So I think identifying, giving a safe space to the children is important.
Right.
Whether that's academics or non-academics.
And for my concluding question, how should a parent come to terms or be okay, or is there a future for a child who is, and these are all interchangeable questions, to a child who's, to our definition of success, right? My child has not made it to JEE, not made it to NEET, not made it to Ivy League schools, not made it to top universities, whatever that may be for that child's goal. Is my child still a success? And how should I deal with it as a parent?
So I think the definition of success is very subjective. How do you qualify success is very different from how I qualify success as. And everybody can have a different definition of success. This is where the game has to change. Am I negotiating my definition of success with my child and saying where you are, where you think potentially you can be, and let's chalk out a path which helps you reach there. And for me, that's a success. Right? For me, that's, if a child is able to cover that journey, that's a success. By saying that only if you qualify certain exam, only if you get certain percentage, or only getting certain marks, if you use that parameters for success, they're very quantitative, objective opinions and not necessarily a matrix of success. I think there was a report by Royal Bank of Canada which was published. The top 100 influencers in the world, only 10 came from Ivy Leagues, 90 came from non-Ivy Leagues, So I think conversations around, and interesting enough, if parents just look around, probably if a parent is an IIT himself, then there is a possibility that the group is around IITians. But if you ask any other parent, who's been to a normal engineering college or a normal BCom college and things like that, if you ask them who their peers are, they might be on a very senior positions with very moderate success. So why don't you see that as a success, the journey of a person? Right.
Yeah.
I remembered I had a friend, brilliant kid, but in grade 12, he got 55% marks only, while all of us were about 75 to 80 bracket. He didn't get admission in day college. He went to evening college. He's a partner at KPMG today.
Wow.
Yeah. And a success, I think, more successful than I am, if I say quantitatively. And I think my definition of success is different, But I and my wife continue to have these conversations because I'm the money person, she's the non-money person, and we keep talking about the matrices of success also has to be balanced. But I'm saying if I look at the child who went to an evening college, and do you have a provision? If you don't get morning college admission because your percentage is low, some colleges offer evening programs for low percentage students. So he went to PGDAV evening college for his BCom pass, not even honors. and his partner at KPMG today.
Wow, interesting.
So why are we not talking about these stories?
Yeah.
Why are we talking about that one kid from SRCC? So, because 20 coaching centers run on that fear or that deficit mindset.
Yeah.
If he doesn't have tuition, he will not have anything.
Oh, 100%. They thrive on us, right? Like the little circles that we become on our first day of newspaper ad after the results are out. That's what we want our children to be, right?
It's a very interesting question. Recently, somebody asked me, your school results are not very good. I said, who said that? He said, you've never pushed it on LinkedIn because I don't believe in it.
That's a very interesting observation.
They said, your results are not good because you've not published on LinkedIn. And I said, doesn't matter. School has published. I'm not going to share it because it doesn't align with what I believe is a success. Because when I'm talking to children, and I also tell Mansi very, very clearly, children, marks do define your trajectory. Let's be practical. If you are less than 60% in school, school will not give you, or maybe 80% in school will not give you sciences. Because school will also have to sort of, there is a business end to it also, right?
Yeah.
Even as a vice principal, I have conversations. Because if you've not achieved certain percentage, you'll not be able to. So it defines what your next journey will be, but it doesn't define who you become. There are two different things, you know. So if you're able to discern between these two, it's fine.
Right. And actually, this question was not part of the question that I decided to ask you past the rest of the interview, but that you mentioned that you've been a math teacher, an incredible math teacher. Why do so many kids fear math? And why have we not been able to produce good math teachers that kids fall in love with math?
We are not able to produce good teachers only, forget about maths teachers. And then we have hordes of teachers and principals going to Finland and understanding to learn. I've also gone there. May go again soon there. My godson is living there these days. So I think this is the whole social construct around that maths is a superior form of knowledge. And only few get it. So I think there is a taboo around it. I dropped maths in grade 11 because there was huge craze about studying computer science, and it had languages like BASIC, Pascal, COBOL, which I don't even hear them, and I wish I had done maths. So I tell children, even if you're getting 60%, continue maths, it's okay, I'll support you. But I think the fear stems from creating a hierarchy of subjects. Science and maths are superior than other subjects. The moment you create superiority, you also sort of create a bracket saying, you're not able. And the second, I think, as our teacher training programs have miserably failed, that's why we don't have good teachers, because we've not been able to tell why maths is important. We are telling maths is important, but we're not telling why it is important, why it is a skill you should have, right? So we take pride in saying our hamare bachche plus minus calculator ke bina kar lete hain. And rest mein nahin karte. But what utility is of that? Because they can't apply a simple mensuration concept into their real life, right? So I think it's a catch-22 situation because there are no great teaching colleges, because maths is superior in a hierarchy of subjects, and hence, it's just a vicious cycle. It's the same thing.
Interesting. Thank you so much. This has been an incredible conversation. Thank you for your time.